This talk was given by Danica Shoan-Ankeli at the Zen Center of New York City. Shoan is a senior monastic in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about the temple's retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org/ccnyc. Thanks for listening.
Good morning, everyone. It's my genuine pleasure to find myself here in Brooklyn this morning. I came down from our monastery in the Catskills last night. So welcome to all of you. My name is Shoan, and my pronouns are she, her. And I would like to open up this new year by revisiting actually my intention and vow from 2018, which I realized, I never really plumbed the depths of that one. So I'm glomming it on to my 2019 vow and intention. I'm figuring, you know, there's always room to go deeper, and I think it can continue to offer. And that was an intention to really listen. So what I want to do this morning is just reflect with you a little bit on some thoughts that I have had about listening as part of our spiritual work, part of our path, a really essential aspect of coming into contact with truth as it lives in ourselves, with truth as we manifest it with one another in relationship, with truth just as it pervades the universe. So to open up, here is a poem from the Zen monk and hermit, 17th century Zen monk and hermit, Ryokan. This was translated from the Japanese by Kaz Tanahashi. Before listening to the way, do not fail to wash your ears. Otherwise, it will be impossible to listen clearly. What is washing your ears? Do not hold on to your view. If you cling to it even a little bit, you will lose your way. What is similar to you but wrong, you regard as right. What is different from you but right, you regard as wrong. You begin with ideas of right and wrong, but the way is not so. Seeking answers with closed ears is like trying to touch the ocean bottom with a pole. So Ryokan trained as a young man in a monastery for about 10 years, and then he left and spent the rest of his life as a hermit and as a beggar, one completely dependent on others for his food and meager belongings. And he has a reputation within Zen as being a bit of a kind of the epitome of like the Zen fool. So deeply in touch and connected to his own sense of truth and practice and reality, that he really had no use for societal norms or convention. And there are many stories about him. He's a really beloved figure within Japanese Zen. And one story which I had never heard before and which I was extremely tickled by is that he used to pick the lice from his robe in the warm spring and place them on a rock to sun themselves. And then at the end of the day, as night began to fall and it got chilly, he would pick them up and put them back on. There's another really nice anecdote with a well-known poem, which I didn't write down, so let me just take a moment and see if I can remember it well enough to share it. I can't believe I didn't write it down. Anyway, I'll just give you the context, okay? I'm not going to try and get the haiku exactly right. So he returns to his hut after a day wandering, and his everything that he owned, which wasn't much, probably a blanket and a sitting cushion and who knows, maybe a saucer and a bowl, everything in his hut had been taken away, had been stolen. And he wrote a verse that you can imagine, you know, he comes back and finds that and says, "Oh, the moon in my window, the thief forgot this." Something like that. Yeah. So he offers us this encouragement from within the depth of his own practice to, if we were listening for the way, and the way being the path of true reality, of peace, of harmony, of living an authentic, connected life in love, however you might understand that to yourself, depending on what brings you in the door. If we want to receive the teachings of the way, we need to wash our ears. We need to be able to let go of what we're filled up with so that we can really listen, so that we can really receive, to not hold or cling to any view, and that to know already, and it doesn't take a lot of personal investigation to know that we consider the things that are similar to us right and different from us wrong. And Ryokan says, what's similar to you but wrong, but it's actually wrong, you're regarding incorrectly as right. And the same is true. What's different from you but is actually true, you're regarding as untrue or wrong. So listening also resonates for me right now because, of course, as a culture, we are not so keen on listening. There's so much talking. There's so much arguing. There's so much, declaring and pontificating. Not to mention all of the texting and posting and liking, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the chatter, just the chatter of our sort of ordinary conversation. And, you know, small talk chit-chat has a place. It's actually, sometimes we have folks who come to the monastery and who, you know, are very silent in the dining hall and they don't want to engage in small talk. And it's like, actually, no, something's happening when you sit down next to someone and say, "So, where are you from? How's your day been?" That's an important way to connect. But when our whole life is taken up with banter, at the expense of deeper kinds of speaking and listening, then we're impoverished in a certain way, and we don't get to really know ourselves or each other or reality. So for me, a turning point in my own practice of Zazen came when I, in a very literal sense, began to listen. And so I want to just land first a little bit with the theme of listening to ourselves, because I actually think that that's a very important aspect of Zazen practice, is learning how to listen to ourselves. In my own experience, there was also a moment of learning how to just be in the Zazen posture and how to just sit there and listen, and to be in a quiet space with very little sound, and to take that in completely. When we sit down and turn our attention to our own mind, and we are, you know, perhaps greeted by a flurry or onslaught of thoughts, it can be a real shocker. I think that, you know, there's been a conversation, kind of an internal conversation going on all along, and we've never actually taken the time or space to listen to ourselves. And so when we sit down and everything else is cleared away and we see, like, what's going on up there, for me anyway, it was kind of horrifying. And as I looked more closely, also helped explain a lot. You know, for some people too, I have to say, I think that shock and that discomfort is the beginning and the end of their interest in Zen practice. You know, sometimes it's like, I don't want to hear that. Or people will say, well, actually, I'm not really good at Zazen. I can't concentrate. And it's like, no, that's the point. That's the point. You can't concentrate. It's okay. We're all right there with you. But when we take the time, right, and Zazen is, if we take it up as a practice over time, we will see our Zazen changes and our experience of Zazen changes. And that very busy chatter in the beginning begins to subside. And I would offer up that I think part of what's happening is that for the first time, we're really listening to ourselves. And if you've had the experience of being in the presence of a really good listener, it's very transformative, right? That thing that you keep saying to yourself, da, 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 if someone really takes you in, it's like, oh, there's a release there. And so there's a way in which just by sitting down, and so, you know, I also offer this as kind of nuanced instruction around that basic instruction of to see the thought and to acknowledge it and to let it go. That acknowledging piece is a listening piece. It's very, very important. We need to hear ourselves. And when we hear ourselves, that's what helps quiet the chatter of the mind. And that's what helps us deepen and actually make contact with a much deeper, subtler, more mysterious dialogue. So genuine listening is, in fact, a very concentrated state. It's not passive, right? And a really good therapist is trained in how to listen really well. And in my experience working with Dharma teachers, a good Dharma teacher is really has learned how to just be completely present, how to just totally listen. And there's an element of mystery, right? It's like you have a problem, you talk to your friend or your therapist or your Dharma teacher, and you know, later someone says, well, so what did they say? And you're like, not much. Not much. They just really listened. They really listened. There's a phrase in Zen to hear, to see with the ear and hear with the eye. And one way of understanding this is, you know, when we're totally listening, every part of our body, it's not just about sound or our ears, it's a complete receptivity. It's our whole body's involved. And if you think of your own experience, if you've had, you know, I don't know, if you have been to a concert or listened to music or been on the edge of your seat as someone's been delivering a lecture or talk or something or performance of some kind, then you know, like, your whole body is involved in that listening, right? There's a reaching out to meet what's coming in. In Zazen, this listening to ourselves also needs to, I think will, help develop a really essential element of love and real acceptance for ourselves just as we are. This is such an important part of Zen practice and kind of a nice thing to revisit at the start of the new year where, you know, we can be filled with, okay, at this fresh start, here's all the things I want to change about myself. And of course, you know, we're all works in progress and that can be a really honorable and important way of proceeding. And then there is the deeper truth that we don't need to change anything. In one sense, we're already perfect. We're already Buddhas. That's the teaching. So learning how to accept ourselves, the voices inside, you don't have to believe them, right? Listening and accepting doesn't mean we buy into our stories or that we believe them wholeheartedly. It just means we're hearing them. We're bearing witness to our own experience. we can kind of hear the leitmotif too that threads its way through. So if I'm sitting there and I'm filled with a busy mind, I can see like, oh wow, I am really upset about, I notice I'm throwing a lot of blame around. Or, geez, I am like super proud of how I handled that situation. And we might see, oh boy, this again, I really do not need to hear that story again, right? And that can be part of like, it exhausts itself. We learn to let things go. There's also listening to the body, which is part and parcel. Zazen is an embodied practice. So although I've been speaking about, you know, the mind and listening to the mind, we have to listen to the body too. And I'm reminded of this in a very direct way. I've had a extreme, I carry all my tension in my shoulders. And just the last, starting New Year's Day, I had this massive knot manifest in my right shoulder. And it got tighter and tighter and tighter to the point. I'm so much better, by the way. Thank you. All my prayers have been answered. I'm so much better. I couldn't raise my hand above a certain point, you know? And like when you think all the things you take for granted, like getting dressed and so on and so forth, like putting on deodorant, I was like trying to wedge it in there without doing this. It's still a little tender. But we had a monastic gathering New Year's, right after New Year's on the night of the 2nd. And so I showed up with like a hot water bottle and everyone was like, oh, what happened? What happened? And someone said, you know, did you hurt yourself? And Zwiko said, the question is, what's on your mind? Which was, of course, the question, like, what's that about? And, you know, I absolutely think that it was what was on my mind. I absolutely think that it was a, you know, somatic manifestation of my unprocessed feelings and so on and so forth. That I, you know, in a conscious way, hadn't been able to allow out. And my body was giving me another chance. Hey, here we are. Listen now. So I've been doing some good work around that. So of course, as we let go of our chattering mind, we can come into contact with our quieter. Sometimes we hear the term, our inner voice, that intuitive, wise part of ourselves, the quieter, more tuned in, voice has a chance to be heard. Listening to each other. You know, I'm just thinking about how just the political moment that we're in and how it's just such a manifestation of like not listening. And I don't know what to do about it. I don't want to listen to some of these people myself, but there is like, you know, the government shutdown is what I'm thinking about, and the kind of the divided nature of our political landscape and the cost that it's having on so many of us and continues to have. And, you know, it's like, well, how do we really listen beyond our, as Ryokan says, the right and the wrong, the views that are similar to mine and different from mine. And I remember the work of, artist, playwright, actor, professor, Anna Deavere Smith, who I understand is still, creating and has a new work out, but I was remembering her piece that was my introduction to her work. So she makes a practice of, and has for several different performance pieces, interviewing hundreds of people around an event or an issue She has a piece out now. I believe it's, I haven't seen it, called Notes from the Field, which is about the school to prison pipeline. Maybe some of you have seen it. I really want to check it out. I wasn't aware of it until I started to work on this talk, because what I remember her work from is back in the 90s, she had a piece called Twilight Los Angeles. And she created that in response to the LA riots after the beating of Rodney King. And what I remember about that was, you know, so she goes and she interviews hundreds of people, you know, from all different perspectives of a situation. In this piece, Twilight Los Angeles, she had spoken to the police chief of the Los Angeles Police Department. She spoke with the Congresswoman Maxine Waters. She spoke with jurors who sat in on the trial, both black jurors and white jurors. A truck driver who was injured in the riots. Korean shopkeeper whose actions helped precipitate the riots. She had killed a young black woman just a week or two after Rodney King's beating. And she transcribes verbatim what people say to her. And then she embodies them. And this woman, if you do not know her work, is able to completely, I mean, it's like, it's not even acting. It's like a shamanic embodiment. She just like goes in and becomes this person. And because you are in the safe space and the created space of theater, my experience was I was able to listen and take in the words and perspectives of all of these different beings in a way that I never would have. And you start to see like, whoa, like right and wrong, that doesn't touch it. She wrote a book in which she spoke about her process and kind of the art of listening and speaking. I think it's called Talk to Me, Listening Between the Lines. And, you know, she says that her work completely rests upon inviting people to communicate and then really listening. And that she saw that so often people respond in kind of habituated ways, right? We get asked a question and here's our response and da-da-da-da-da, and we kind of say the same thing again and again. And so she worked with a linguist to ask, like, how do I crack through that? Like, how do I actually get in there to have a real conversation? And the linguist offered up three questions to help crack the shell of verbal habit. And I thought that they were interesting. So the three questions were, have you ever come close to death? Do you know the circumstances of your birth? Have you ever been accused of something that you did not do? Interesting, right? And so that became a way for her to find her way in. And, you know, she's a master. This matter of listening to other people and the importance of it, I was thinking of it also in relationship to the retreat that happened here yesterday at the temple called Healing the Wounds of Racism, a Dharma retreat for people of color. And for this program, the program was for people of color, and the instructors were really clear about, you know, the temple needs to be a space that's just for people of color on this day. And so the folks who live and work here who identify as white made plans to be out for the day. And we asked Sangha volunteers who are familiar with the temple to come in and take care of the registration and the food and the setup and all of that. So I wasn't here, but and I haven't actually had the chance to speak to anyone directly who was. I heard that it was amazing third hand. So I hope that experience was shared by many who participated. Perhaps some of you were here. I bring this up because I think that there is a way that listening deeply relates to this work of healing the wounds of racism. And whether we identify as a person of color or as a white person, our relationship to that listening is going to be different. A woman named Kelsey Blackwell, a writer and dancer, wrote a piece in the journal, the Arrow Journal, called Why People of Color Need Spaces Without White People. And she writes, people of color need their own spaces. Black people need their own spaces. We need places in which we can gather and be free from the mainstream stereotypes and marginalization that permeate every other societal space we occupy. We need spaces where we can be our authentic selves without white people's judgment and insecurity muzzling that expression. We need spaces where we can simply be, where we can get off the treadmill of making white people comfortable and finally realize just how tired we are. Valuing and protecting spaces for people of color is not just a kind thing that white people can do to help us feel better. Supporting these spaces is crucial to the resistance of oppression. When people of color are together, there can be healing. We can reclaim parts of ourselves that have been repressed. And she continues to speak a little bit more about her strong feelings of why anti-racist work is it's important to do it in non-integrated groups. So it's important for people of color to come together to do this work, and it's really important also for white people to come together as white people to do this work. And she writes, you know, about the experience of being in mixed race groups and hearing white people kind of process from their own perspective their experiences of racism, which of course are always in the role of the oppressor, right? And so she says, you know, why do I need to hear this? The fact that racism exists is not a surprise to me. That it infiltrates my very own community is obvious. I do not need to hear more stories about it. Are these admissions made in hopes of atonement? Atonement is not mine to give. The only thing I want to hear from white people about race is, I'm sorry. I didn't see. I didn't listen. I'm working to see and listen now. And I'm struck by this, right? Because there is the power of being like, I don't need to listen to that anymore, which is absolutely true. And then there is the power of, I'm sorry. I'm trying to learn to listen. I'm working on listening. And that in our culture, it's fairly clear how those roles need to manifest at the present. And we may each have our own relationship to them, but I, as a white person, appreciate this. And I appreciate that the work of listening to the experience of people of color and to letting a conversation about race really be on their terms, in which I am at the table to hear and receive, I think is so, so important. Not easy, really not easy. Really not easy. And of course, when we're listening across differences or when we're listening in a situation where it's a charged conversation, it's so easy to become defensive and uncomfortable and want to retreat. And these are, of course, are all easily identifiable habitual responses, predictable responses that white people have in conversations around race. So as white people, we can become, I think, aware of this and really take up a practice of learning to listen and learning to listen better. Because I know I have also been a person who thinks I hear, thinks I get it, thinks I understand, and I'm just on the surface. I haven't yet dropped lower. when we're listening across difference, and you know, if I think about like political difference, and I have my own strong political opinions and beliefs, and so to sit in the company of someone who has different opinions and beliefs is not something I do very much, and does summon forth the need for very deep practice and qualities of patience and perseverance and generosity and a willingness to stay connected and in relationship even when I'm getting like hot and tense and agitated. And this brings me to a really critical point about listening that I think is true when we're listening to ourselves, definitely true when we're listening to each other, and then becomes of the utmost importance, the most secret practice instruction when we are listening to the way. And that is to relax. So just in the moments where we feel ourselves get tight and tense and it's like, how do we relax and stay with it and stay connected and stay in our body? Very, very advanced practice. Very advanced practice, and we can bring it in all fields of our spiritual practice sphere. So, thinking about listening to the way, you know, this practice instruction is not my original to offer. I give it to you freshly minted from a recent face-to-face teaching I had with Hojin Sensei, in which I was asking her about, you know, I think I said something like, you know, do you have any turning words for me as I try and like deepen my zazen and, you know, see into the nature of things? I'm paraphrasing, but you get the idea. And she was like, I could tell that the phrase turning words made her nervous. That's like a Zen phrase. It's a little bit loaded. And she was like, and then she said, relax. So to deeply, deeply relax, to stop doing, to stop creating, to be attentive and awake, receptive. What can we receive? Zazen is actually a practice of deep relaxation. And if we really listen in a very relaxed way, then no matter what, it's easy to find in nature, but it's absolutely present in the midst of Penn Station. What we will find is that if we listen, there's silence. What is this silence? If we really, 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 really listen in a relaxed, receptive way, letting go of all our own production, I, me, mine, our views, our attitudes, what we cling to, whole body and mind, attuning to reality, what do we find? Well, of course, anything that we find would be utterly beyond words, beyond that kind of language or expression. But what comes to my mind is the fact that the bodhisattva of compassion, that being of great, tremendous, boundless, unconditional love, Kanon Bodhisattva, Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, their name is the one who listens to the cries of the world. So in this deep, deep listening, in this deep relaxation, we may find something we could hang the word love onto, an experience, a manifestation, a feeling within ourselves? Is it within ourselves? Is it outside of ourselves? What is this love? You know, Ryokan, he would from time to time accept invitations from the local folk to spend the night, you know, have dinner, stay a bit as a house guest. And there is one, I'm sure there are many accounts, but there's one account that drew my eye from someone who wrote about having Ryokan stay with them in their home for a few days. And they said, you know, for days after he left, our home was pervaded by a sense of harmoniousness. And they were trying to, you know, go into that a little bit further. And they said, you know, he didn't explain Zen or any other Buddhist scriptures, nor did he encourage wholesome actions. He didn't talk about Buddhist literature or anything like this. He was indescribably relaxed. And he taught others by his presence. And for those of us who train and work with the teachers in face-to-face teaching, it is kind of astonishing. You know, sometimes you go in and you know you're the, you know, 18th person in a row that the teacher has been and in you know, interview with. And who knows what everyone's been bringing in. Da, 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 and you take your seat and look up, and there they are, totally relaxed. Such a body teaching in that. So, to the practice of listening to ourselves, to each other, to the way. Happy New Year.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as meditation cushions, incense, malas, liturgical instruments, books, and more, visit the Monastery Store at monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.